This is going to be heavy right here. But think of this. When the pyramid was built, that its main chamber incorporated the, quote, sacred 3, 4, 5, and 2 triangles. Which were to make Pythagoras famous and which Plato and his Timaeus claimed as the building blocks of the cosmos. In short, they understood the basic elements of the most sophisticated. You don't have to understand the sentence you just read. They understood the basic elements of the most sophisticated mathematical formulations that enable us to plot the movement of the stars, the earth, the circumference of the earth, the shape of the earth. They understood it all. Chance was said to be responsible for the fact that the pyramid's angles and slopes display an advanced understanding of trigonometric values, that its shape quite precisely incorporates the fundamental proportions of the golden section today known by the Greek letter, it's the Greek letter Psi. Necessary, Michelangelo couldn't have done his work without it. It's the basis for all responsible architectural structures. Revered equally by masters in modern architecture. According to modern academicians, the first use of pi in Egypt was not until about 1700 BC, at least a millennium after the latest dating of when the pyramid was built. Because the latest dating puts it somewhere around 2500 BC. The theorem of those sacred numbers, the building blocks of the cosmos, was not developed until the 5th century BC, and the development of trigonometry was attributed to Hipparchus in the 2nd century before Christ. Because of the pyramid and the compounding in recent years of the opening up and studying of the chambers and the ability with modern instruments to analyze it, the whole theory of knowledge of mathematics in that regard has had to be redone. This pyramid laid down an exact formula for the shape of the earth. It was an exact replica in mathematic formulas of the north half of the globe. They had down to less in one of the calculations than the width of a human hair. Calculations that only the last two, indeed the last millennium of this earth was supposed to have discovered. 10 miles to the west of Cairo, on the plateau called Giza, the Arabs call it Giza, stands this pyramid. Its base covers 13 acres, 7 midtown blocks of the city of New York. From this broad area, leveled to within a fraction of an inch, more than 2.5 million blocks of limestone and granite. I mean, it was either built 2400 to 2700 BC, somewhere around there. The flood is dated by those that believe Bishop Usher about 2483 BC. So in the 300 years after the flood, it was built by some calculations, or it was built in the years before the flood. A plateau leveled to within a fraction of an inch. Talk about surveying instruments. More than 2.5 million blocks of limestone and granite weighing 2 to 70 tons apiece. If you'll hang in with me, I'm going to show you something in a minute. rise in 201 step tiers to the height of a modern 40-story building, etched against the cloudless blue of the Egyptian skies. I know you've seen them in movies and on TV. I want you to get a feel for this place. In terms of solid masonry, the structure contains more stone than all the cathedrals, churches, and chapels built in England since the time of Christ. That register in your brain for a minute? With no bulldozers, no giant cranes, as we know them, no mathematical ability, Stonehenge people run around in loincloths and stone axes. As originally designed with its full mantle of polished limestone, the pyramid must have been a dazzling sight. Unlike marble, which tends to become eroded with time and the weather, limestone becomes harder and more polished. What the Great Pyramid looked like when it was completed, or even for the first 1 or 2,000 years thereafter, is not recorded in history. No description of the pyramid has survived in the Egyptian texts. That tends to push it in the direction of a belief that it was built before the flood, in spite of those who think everything was destroyed. This is sort of an indestructible place, and water wouldn't do that much damage to its limestone. Legends have it painted in various colors, marked with designs, and inscribed with symbols. The first eyewitness descriptions from classical authors are pitifully sparse. Thales, the father of Greek geometry, who visited the pyramid sometime in the 6th century B.C., is reputed to have astounded its Egyptian guardians with a correct computation of its height by measuring its shadow at the time of day when his own shadow was equal to his height. But unfortunately, he left no detailed description of his visit. Herodotus, the father, in some people's minds, of modern history, who saw the pyramid about 440 B.C., by which time it was as ancient to him as his period is to us. 440 B.C. is kind of ancient to us, but it was as ancient to him as this is to us, says that each of the structure's four perfectly triangular faces was still covered at that date with a mantle of highly polished limestone, the joints so fine they could scarcely be seen. In his history, which contains the first comprehensive account of Egypt to have survived intact, Herodotus deals with other aspects of the pyramid. Siculus, the Greek historian who lived soon after the time of Christ, described the Great Pyramid's 22 acres of polished casing stones as being complete and without the least decay. One of the writers describes a door, an opening, that you could not discern on the face, but had been located. When it was closed, you couldn't see it. Sometime during the early centuries of the Christian era, the location of that door was destroyed. Then comes the Middle Ages, when the church, before it started joining the world, overreacted against and destroyed everything. They destroyed and sacked the Library of Alexandria, made it a sin to visit the pyramids, and the only breakthrough that began to research them came with the Arabs. When the followers of Muhammad swept into power in the Near East in the 7th century and captured Alexandria, it was those Arabs, Abdullah al-Mamun, who determined that he would get into this pyramid. He ran an up-to-date intelligence service, it says, under the direction of his postmaster general, employing as many as 1,700 old women as intelligence agents in Baghdad alone. I mean, that's a smart man. I mean, if you want a good intelligence service, employ 700 old women, 1,700 old women that have nothing to do but talk and gossip. Thank God I don't have any like that in my King's House crowds. Through these 1,700 women, he was informed that the Great Pyramid was reputed to contain a secret chamber with maps and tables of the celestial and terrestrial spheres. Although they were said to have been made in the remote past, they were supposed to be of great accuracy. The chamber was also reported to contain vast treasures and such strange articles as, quote, arms that would not rust, end quote, meaning what he was looking for in munition arms, and glass, which is malleable or bends and will not rust and will not break. The arms will not rust and the glass will not break. Arab historians have recounted the tale of Al-Mamun's attempts to enter the pyramid. Now, all this has been dug out. You can't believe the price that has been paid, and they've only scratched the surface of this pyramid. And so I anticipate, so you don't go to sleep too quick on me tonight. When they begin to uncover the chambers, prophecy teachers, particularly those in England, when this began to come to light, who were also profound and respected scientists, conceived as one explanation of the pyramid that someone with superhuman ability prior to the flood, who walked and talked with God, like a space capsule. You know, this is modern terminology to you. If you want to encase a space capsule that will preserve the learning and the knowledge of this generation, faced with the Holocaust possibility of atomic warfare. Now, we know from the promises of God that God will not let the world be destroyed. He'll shorten the time at the end, because man's learning and man's badness will have advanced, that if God doesn't shorten the time, there's a danger man will wipe man out. But remember, Enoch, he got a promise. When his kid was born, God told him to name the kid, and the name of the kid was Methuselah, which means, when he dies, the end comes. So here is a man who lives. How long did Enoch live? He's no dummy, you know. Enoch lived one whale of a long time. And there's probably no better use of the word whale than that. He lived one whale of a long, long time. And Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. Now, Methuselah is the oldest one of the bunch, because God in His grace, once He said when he dies, He's going to wipe the world out, that tells you God's grace that He let the man whose lifespan determined how long before God wiped the world out, He let him live longer than anybody. God's long-suffering patience. Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And you don't read, and he died. He didn't live as long as the others, but he didn't die. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Enoch walked with God. Now, wait a minute. I just beat my head trying to get out of this book knowledge from God. I have studied all my life. Man, to walk with God. Talk about getting smart. And having 300, how much was it? 300 and how many years? 365 years. And he knew the world was coming to an end. Now, there are some who conjecture that he may have built his space capsule. And he put in it, as they unearthed the chambers, they worked out. Now, don't you listen close to me. Gene Scott will never go off on some crazy tangent. That's why I don't tell you some other books to read. I stay with the Book of God. I just want to intrigue you with the mysteries of this pyramid and the alternatives that have come across the minds of men about it. The chambers of this pyramid, when they finally opened them up, offered a formula for the whole prophetic structure of the world laid out in 7,000 years. Now, I said the other night, if a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, and he rests on the Sabbath, there is just the possibility, speculation, and you'll always hear me distinguish between speculation and what thus saith the word of the Lord, and any private revelation that someone claims had better conform to thus saith the word of the Lord, because if an angel comes saying anything else, you're to say, let him be accursed. But if it is 11:30 night, instead of listening to some of the other junk on TV, let me lead you down these trails. If a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, and he rests on the seventh day, and the millennium's 1,000 years, maybe, if this old earth is rocking and rolling toward the end of the sixth millennium, and somebody walked with God to whom God was kind enough to reveal his ways, and he sealed this, quote, space capsule, and it was built with the superhuman knowledge of an Enoch. I'm having fun tonight. I've only done this one other time since I've been here, as I recall, when I preached on Saturn this one Sunday morning. I said, let me have some fun. I mean, I haven't been in school so long. Let me have some fun with a few people willing to do it with me. I also told you there's other alternatives. That these pyramids are the creation of a devil-inspired genius. As the devil, who would be like God, having been cast out of heaven, has been fighting ever since to one-up God in his caricatured imitation. Maybe this pyramid is the crowning architectural evil genius of Satan, built by some evil offspring of Satan before the flood, or built by Ham, the cursed one, after the flood, which would explain the evil, shaken experience that occurred to Napoleon, and he went out to his evil deeds, would explain the effect it had on Alexander the Great, would explain it being the source of Freemasonry and the role that they played in the American Revolution, and the imagery on the dollar bill that you look at and don't pay much attention to. and the symbols of sun worship and the false religion that will reach their paramount position. In the book of Revelation. Dag nabbit, I want you to get my budget done so I can teach. Centuries it took to uncover these chambers that are evil designs or prophetic pictures. And do you know, if you listen to me enough to know, that the devil's caricatures are always just so close but a little out of focus? I never had so much fun in my life. In 820, the young caliph collected a vast conglomeration. This Al-Mamun's the tenth, the guy who hired the 1,700 old women, and they gossiped and told him about the treasures there. He hired a vast conglomeration of engineers, architects, builders, and stonemasons to attack the pyramid. For days they searched the steep, polished, because it was covered with limestone then, the steep, polished surface of the northern slope for its secret entrance, but could find no trace of it. I want to go in 1982. I'm getting eager to go. Not to be thwarted, Al-Mamun decided to burrow straight into the solid rock of the structure in the hope of running across some passage within the interior. You got a picture of how big it is? I gave you that a minute ago. Hammer and chisel would not dent the huge blocks of limestone, no matter how many blacksmiths stood ready to sharpen them. So a more primitive but effective system was used. Fires were built close to the blocks of masonry, and when these became red hot, this is 820 A.D., they were doused with cold vinegar until they cracked. Then battering rams knocked out the fragmented stone, the first break in the limestone. For over 100 feet, Al-Mamun's men tunneled into the solid core of the pyramid, excavating a narrow passage that became hotter, dustier, and more constricted. Boy, I got claustrophobia when I read this. Just imagine this. Excavating a narrow passage that became hotter, dustier, and more constricted. Illumination by candle or flare consumed oxygen and poisoned the air. Al-Mamun was on the point of giving up when a workman heard a muffled sound of something heavy falling somewhere within the pyramid east of the tunnel. Renewing their efforts and altering the direction of the bore. See, not just a big old four-sided triangle, built either 2,400 or 3,000 or 5,000 years ago. Renewing their efforts and altering the direction of the tunnel, the workers broke into a hollow way, exceeding dark, dreadful to look at, and difficult to pass. It was a passage. And you see snakes and bugs already. It was a passage 3.5 feet wide by 3 feet 11 inches high. Which sloped at a steep angle of 26 degrees. On the floor lay a large prismatic stone which had been dislodged from the ceiling of the passage. Struggling up the passage on all fours, the Arabs discovered that secret entrance that had been lost about 90 feet to the north. It had been placed 49 feet above the base of the pyramid, 10 courses of stones higher than where he had started boring in. So the first tunnel was just knocking it through. Then they worked back up the passage they broke into and found that secret opening that had disappeared from history. Retracing their steps, Al-Mamun and his men groped down. Boy, what men will do for gold. Groped down the low, slippery, descending passage cut deep into the rock of the plateau. At the bottom, they were disappointed to find nothing but the unfinished, roughly hewn chamber or pit with an uneven floor containing nothing but debris and dust. Now remember, They're in the beginnings of an intricate pattern of inside passageways, markers, and developments that will totally support a prophetic pattern of history of 7,000 years. They're just now starting to find the way. I got people out there going to say, I knew it. Scott's finally going to go off the deep end. Just wait. Retracing her steps, Al-Mamun and his men groped down the low, slippery, descending passage. And all they found was this roughly hewn chamber, a pit with an uneven floor, containing nothing but debris and dust. On the far side of it, now imagine, they're way inside this big, monstrous, how many blocks? Write this down so I don't have to go back. 13 acres, 7 midtown blocks of the city of New York. The height of a modern 40-story building. How high is the building downtown here in L.A.? What's the highest one? 40. Now, they're in here with torches. 3 feet and a half by 3 feet 11 inches. On the far side of it, an even narrower horizontal passage. Now, it narrows up to a little horizontal passage. Led 50 feet to a blank wall. Now, they're just going in for the first time. Never know when a snake's going to rear his head. A scorpion going to bite. I mean, if you think those people in Raiders of the Lost Ark got a scare when they dropped down that little hole, that ain't nothing alongside this. In the floor, a well shaft appeared to have been carved to a depth of 30 feet, leading nowhere, appeared. From torch marks on the ceiling, the Arabs deduced that the pit had been visited prior to them. Because prior to medieval time, that secret opening had been known and disappeared. So way back somewhere, that pit had been visited in classical times, and anything of interest it may have contained had long since been removed. What now intrigued the Arabs was the large prismatic stone. Thank God for Arabs that crawl around caves. They found the Dead Sea Scrolls. They find everything. Looking for money. Or oil. What intrigued the Arabs was the large prismatic stone that had fallen from the ceiling of the descending passage. It had evidently covered the end of a large rectangular red and black granite plug, which completely filled what looked like another passage sloping up into the body of the pyramid. And here they see what looks like another passage plugged with granite. Some intelligent person plugged it. Now, if you don't want your time capsule or your space capsule found prematurely, you're going to make it hard to get there. These plugs have, they've gotten past the plugs now, centuries. He got by, and this Arab did. Why the plugs? Mystified people. And they've even reconstructed how those plugs from where we're going to go in a few minutes, maybe, were set up to fall down and plug that passageway. How many of you saw Raiders of the Lost Ark? Remember how it opens? That stone that rolls after him and seals that place? It's like that. Plugs like that. It had evidently covered the end of a large rectangular red and black granite plug, which completely filled what looked like another passage sloping up into the body of the pyramid. Now they're going into the guts and innards of it. Of such a passage, there had been no mention in the writings of Strabo, who was the one that mentioned that secret opening on the outside, or other classical author. You want me to quit? You want me to quit? I can shut you off and still talk to them. Al-Mamun figured he might have stumbled onto a secret which had been kept since the original construction of the building, because their boring had broken loose this covering in the ceiling that opened up what looked like a passage that was plugged with granite plugs, not just loose rocks, perfectly shaped granite plugs. But if they hadn't bored the way they bored, shaking loose the covering, it might not have been discovered. The Arabs tried to chip or dislodge the granite plug, but it was tightly wedged of indeterminate length, and it evidently weighed several tons in there in the middle of it. I mean, did the guy they buried there plug it up after his grievers left? Spurred by the prospect of a new passage leading to some hidden treasure chamber. What money will do? Al-Mamun ordered his men to cut around the plug through the softer limestone blocks of the surrounding walls. Even this turned out to be more of a job than expected. When the Arabs had bored beyond the first granite plug for over 6 feet, they encountered a second granite plug. Well, whoever did this, I'd like him to hide my money, if I had any. Equally hard and equally tightly wedged. When they bored around that one, beyond it lay a third. By now, the Arabs had tunneled more than 16 feet. Beyond the third granite plug, they came upon a passage filled with a limestone plug which could be cracked with chisels and removed piece by piece. So they didn't have to bore around it. They could just cut through the plug. It's not recorded how many such plugs the Arabs encountered, but they may have had to clear a score or more. 20 plugs. Before they could force their way into a narrow ascending passage this time. Again, less than four. Now, we won't have to go in via that passage. I want you to know that. They could force their way into a narrow ascending passage, again less than 4 feet high and equally narrow. On their hands and knees, holding their torches low, Al-Mamun and his men were obliged to scramble up 150 feet of dark, slippery passageway. At the same exact steep slope of 26 degrees before they could raise their heads and stand on a level spot. Do you know 26 degrees is pretty steep? In front of them now stretched, they were standing finally on a level spot, in front of them now stretched another low horizontal passage, no higher than the one they had painfully ascended. I get the heebie-jeebies just thinking at that point. Inching their way to the end of this passage, they found themselves in a rectangular limestone room with a rough floor and a gabled limestone roof. Now, they're subsequently going to find a big room that doesn't have a gabled roof, because what they've come to call, thinking it was burial chambers, is the queen's room had a gabled roof. The king's room didn't. This was the queen's, as it came to be called. Maybe built only for burial places. Maybe. Let me quit. Because of the custom among the Arabs of placing their women in tombs with gabled ceilings. You notice why they say that? The Arabs assumed. Hey, it wasn't Arabs that built this pyramid. They called it the Queen's Chamber, because they thought it was a tomb. A lot of people thought a lot of things. During the Middle Ages, they thought it was the granaries built by Joseph to store the grain during the 7 years of plenty so they could hold it during the 7 years of famine. It wasn't. They called it the Queen's Chamber, the bare room, 18 feet long and almost square. Now they got space to stretch. Had an empty niche in the east wall large enough to have contained an over-life-size statue. Thinking the niche might conceal the entrance to a second chamber, the Arabs hacked their way into its solid masonry for another yard before giving up. Retracing their steps to where they had left the low ascending passage, all they accomplished now was get into this bare room with a gable ceiling. Now they retrace their steps. All of this is going to be part of the roadmap of prophecy. The Arabs raised their torches into an ominous void among them, or above them. In the side walls, joist holes indicated that the floor of the ascending passage had once continued upwards, blocking and hiding the low passage to the Queen's Chamber. You see, when they came to the level spot, they went sideways to the Queen's Chamber. Now they're back to this ascending passage. And they see that there's a low passage. Climbing on each other's shoulders and raising their torches, the Arabs now saw that they were at the bottom of a narrow but grand gallery about 28 feet high, which appeared to stretch upward at the same steep slope as the ascending passage into the black and mysterious heart of the pyramid. The center of this new passage was very slippery, but to either side of it were two narrow ramps slotted at regular intervals for someone to walk on. Holding their torches high, the Arabs proceeded. Give me a camera over here. I'm going to show you some drawings of what it looks like. Holding their torches high, the Arabs proceeded to escalate these ramps. At the end of another 150-foot climb, they came upon a huge solid stone. Now, if you just tuned in, there ain't no way you can catch me. Just see me tomorrow. At the end of another 150-foot climb, they came upon a huge solid stone raised 3 feet from the floor. They had to clamber up on top of it in order to stand at the top of the gallery on a 6 by 8 foot platform. Beyond this platform, the floor continued level. Here they go. We're going to talk about the bats in a minute. Look at them climbing up with the bats flying. See them going up that narrow one? There's the bats. Now go to the right and you'll see the artist's drawing of the one they were going up with those things on the side to put their hands in. I mean their hands and feet in. So they sort of went up like so. Beyond this platform, the floor continued level. Here's a better picture of those poor Arabs trying to get up that thing. You'll see one of them, if you can zoom in on the upper part of the picture, going up the area that had the footholds. The ceiling fell now to a mere 41 inches. That's 3 feet 5 inches. Forming a small entrance into a small antechamber. Past that entrance, Al-Mamun's men were again obliged to stoop along a short passage which led to yet another chamber. Their torches revealed a great and well-proportioned room. The walls, floor, and ceiling were all of beautifully wrought and polished red granite blocks, squared and extremely finely jointed. Described as a right noble apartment, 34 feet long, 17 broad, 19 high. Because of its flat ceiling, the Arabs called it the King's Chamber. Al-Mamun's men frantically searched every cranny of the chamber, but could find nothing of interest or value. There was no sign of any treasure. Only a large, lidless sarcophagus of highly polished, dark, chocolate-colored granite. Here's a little drawing of that King's Chamber they finally got to right here. And there's the sarcophagus. Now, you remember, they bored a hole through the side. They encountered a descending narrow tunnel. They went down to a pit. They had knocked something off that looked like plugs. They had cut around the plugs and then went up at a 26-degree angle through a long, narrow channel, took a side road into the Queen's Chamber, which is below. They named it Queen's Chamber. Now they break into this chamber, thinking they'll find the treasure, and there's this empty sarcophagus. No body, no nothing. A single empty chest. It either had nothing there, or the whole place had previously been looted. But they found no evidence of that. How and by whom, it's hard to imagine, considering the enormous number of stone plugs the Arabs had been obliged to break up in order to make their entrance. Best evidence indicates that's the way it was. That's all that was there. Of course, they didn't know. They didn't know it had the exact dimensions of the Ark of the Covenant. Those Arabs didn't know that modern research would uncover two different cubits used in ancient literature. Ordinary cubit and what is sometimes called the sacred or the royal cubit. And to fail, it took modern archaeology and science to discover that, to unravel some of the false conjectures of measurement in the ancient world, because they failed to recognize the ordinary cubit being used by people. It's like, you know, we poor dummies, we count days, 365, but mathematicians have worked out some little old leap year formula that makes up that weird little differentiation in the years that go along with the calendar. The mathematicians have figured it out for us. We just add a day and leap year. Right? We use February to adjust our little calendars. There was a royal cubit or a sacred cubit, which archaeology has confirmed is the one that was used in the biblical design given to Moses, and the exact dimensions of this sarcophagus are the Ark of the Covenant. Isn't that interesting? Al-Mamun's men frantically searched. Some Arabian authors have reported that Al-Mamun found in the sarcophagus a stone statue in the shape of a man. They say that within the statue lay a body wearing a breastplate of gold set with precious stones and a valuable sword on his chest and a carbuncle ruby on his head. There's no historical evidence to support this tale. Instead, the evidence indicates to Al-Mamun it was empty. It appeared that either the vast mausoleum had been built about nothing but a simple, single, empty chest, or the whole place had previously been looted. Though how and by whom, it's repeated, hard to imagine. In a fury of disappointment, they are in there finding their chest. Poor guys. I mean, they've fought bats and vermin and stale air and darkness and bruises to find an empty square box. It's almost as good as the Ark of the Covenant.